Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Taavi Kotka to the broadcast. Taavi is the former Chief Information Officer of the Estonian government, which is widely recognized as the most advanced digital society in the world. As CIO, Taavi was the driving force behind many of Estonia's e-government innovations, such as its e-residency program, which, just 2 years after its launch, offers a transnational digital identity to over 20,000 e-residents worldwide. Prior to his four-year term as Estonian government's CIO, Taavi was the CEO of Nortal, previously Webmedia, one of the largest software development companies in the Baltic states. Taavi was one of Webmedia's founding members and served as its chief development officer and managing director prior to becoming CEO. Taavi obtained a Master of Science degree in Engineering from Tallinn University of Technology and a Bachelor of Science in Engineering and Information Technology from the University of Tartu. I recently caught up with Taavi by phone in his office in Tallinn, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as Taavi discussed the ways in which Estonia uses its digital advantage to attract top entrepreneurial talent and thus grow its economy. Principle 2, infrastructure, as Taavi described the foundational infrastructure that enables 99% of government services to be offered online in a safe and secure manner. And Principle 5, external partnerships, as Taavi discussed how the collaborative and trusting relationship between Estonia's government, citizens, and private sector has created the environment for the world's most advanced digital society to flourish. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are, one, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. Two, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. Three, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. Four, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And five, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's 1 day a week or full-time, be included within their offer packages.
Well, Taavi Kotka, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to have you. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Taavi, I learned about you and through the work that you did as the Chief Information Officer of Estonia, and remarkable work it has been. Estonia, as many will know, has developed a reputation as perhaps the most digitally savvy, technically competent government and country in the world. And a lot of the change that has made that reputation possible, you've been very much involved in and led. And I wanted to, before we get into the specifics of the changes, I wanted to get back to the genesis story, if I may. Why Estonia? What is it? What are the secret ingredients, either in the combination between the government that was in place that you were a part of, and the citizenry, and other structural advantages that were there, that made this sort of change and transformation possible?
Yeah, it's a good question, but it wasn't me. I mean, it was set up already like almost 20 years ago. Because after we broke apart from the Soviet Union, it was clear, especially for the private sector, that Estonia is actually a huge country land-wise. Like, land-wise, we are bigger than Netherlands or or Switzerland or Denmark. So, but there's only 1.3 million people living here. So for private sector, it was clear that that it's impossible to physically serve all the people living here in this country. So you can't have a bank office, for example, in every small town. It's just economically not efficient. So, and the same with government. I mean, you can't have a government officer in every village. Like, so private sector first, and after that, the government started to push people to use internet and e-services. So, instead of bank, please use internet bank. Instead of cash, please use credit card. Like, so all that kind of stuff happened.
And Tavi, what was, and roughly when was that taking place?
Internet was born like in 1990s. So, nationally, it was, pushed more like starting from 1995, 1996 already.
Remarkably early.
Yeah, I mean, and I was a programmer back then, so I still remember all those reforms, like, so, and I still remember myself hating those, because as for a young programmer, it all seems like a nonsense bureaucracy, but now, like, 20 years later, being the CIO, I salute those people, like, who actually set all the baseline, and put the baseline in place.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And you were, fast-forwarding a little bit, you were the chief executive officer of the largest software company in the country. And so you were in the private sector and obviously a leader in the private sector, but were drawn to the public sector. And I wonder what that change was, what transpired to inspire you to join the government and join its efforts as it continued to progress.
First of all, it was when I sold my shares, I got this non-competition thing. I couldn't compete in private sector for 2 years. The second thing was that the government really wanted me to join the team. And I asked two things. I asked the parking spot behind the government building, because it was an old town and it's very hard to park there. And also full political support, however, how crazy ideas I have. And I have to admit, they fulfilled their promise, and it was even harder to get the parking spot. Than
That's great. Well, let's get to some of those crazy ideas. Tell me a bit about some of what you ushered in the early days and the inspiration for it.
I mean, like, especially I think last year, the Estonia has been known for e-residency or, as it more known, digital citizenship. I mean, that was just one idea we had, and then what we created. Myself, I'm actually more proud about real-time economy and no legacy policy what we put in place in society. I mean, in Estonia, like, you have to know our architecture, like, everything is connected. So basically, we could combine information from different registries because everybody's using the same kind of identifiers for the data. So it's very easy to combine different data sets. And the trust between the companies, people, and the government is so strong that, like, just giving you an example, companies are willing to share their business-to-business data with the government on a monthly basis. So the government knows who deals with whom. And then this way, they protect the market better from the tax fraud perspective. Also, it gives full understanding what happens in the economy. For example, like, how our gas industry is doing, how our machinery is doing, so how one region is getting better compared to the other region, how much capital moved from one area to another area. So so it's future of governments. It's, we call it real-time economy, but it's a future of governments because the current governments, they have a problem. Their data they have, it's always like old. I mean, try to run a huge company relying on data from last year. I mean, or like 12, 18 months old data. It's impossible. But we have solved that in Estonia. And I really, we still struggle because, I mean, the data is there, the model is there, but we can run future prediction models on top of this data. But a lot of people who are like politicians, they are still like a fake old fashioned, so not too smart to deal with that data.
I see. And actually, so some of the ideas behind from what you're talking about were brought forward with early versions of like the blockchain. The term was probably not even around at the point at which this began. But I'd be curious in your own perspectives on leveraging blockchain technology as one of the cores, the core aspects of the infrastructure to bring this to life.
I mean, blockchain is especially useful in societies where the trust is an issue. It's not so, I'll say, hype in North Europe because here it's different. I mean, the trust in Scandinavia, the trust in Finland, in Estonia, in Sweden, I mean, those people, they trust the government. Mm-hmm. So they don't have, they cannot understand the need to hide everything from the eyes of the government. Because, I mean, we have understood that, I don't know, Google, Apple, they know way more about any of us than our governments. Like, so, and if you're not worried about that, why you should be worried about government? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have been using blockchain kind of technology, a very long time. We have used it as an extra like security layer. For example, when Estonia patient records, like healthcare patient records, they are every doctor can access every person patient records, not even your own hospital, but also from other hospitals. And that layer is actually protected with blockchain kind of technology, let's say it this way. I mean, they were in place before blockchain actually was officially announced. To be honest, I mean, security is currently the only use case where we actually have a real example, because if you build a registry, you still need a relational database or some kind of database behind it, because let's say you want to create the property registry in blockchain. Yes, you can do that, but whenever you want to search data afterwards, you still need some faster technology there, to solve those kind of problems. Our eyes are open. We are using this technology in some places, but you can get efficiency and the benefits of being digital society in more areas than just blockchain.
I see. Interesting point. I also wanted to ask you. You talked about how the government transformed its technology to all modern technology and allowed for data to be portable and more comprehensive than many companies even have achieved, to say nothing of governments. And I wonder what that migration looked like. Was that an arduous process? Was there a lot of technical debt, so to say, or antiquated technology that needed to be retired in order to foster this?
No, I mean, 20 years ago, I think architects back then, they did very smart decisions. And they set the solid baseline, because Estonia has silos, every country has silos, different ministries, they have their own kingdoms, etc. So it was clear that we cannot have one big database for everything. So what we did is we created this system totally distributed since the beginning. So basically every ministry, every institution protects their and builds and creates their own systems. And it just assured that whenever the data is needed to be exchanged, we can do that. And to motivate that exchange between the silos and then different registries, we created the rule, or it's actually a principle, it's not a law, but it's a principle that the information can be asked from the citizen only once. So if you have given your data to one ministry and the other one needs the same information, they cannot ask it from you. They have to take it from the ministry you already gave that. So and people like that. People like the fact that they don't have to run around with papers and giving the same kind of data to everybody. Instead of that, government is doing the data exchange in the background. And as we see today, in Estonia, 99.97% of all data transactions are digital, and they mostly happen in the background. So there's very little interaction between the person and the government.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wanted to actually talk a little bit more about some of those, what this feels like at the citizen level. So healthcare data, financial data, the ability to pay for things, you know, personal records and so on. Can you talk a little bit about what one would find in Estonia, what a citizen of Estonia experiences differently? You've already begun to allude to some of those, but I'd love a more comprehensive picture that highlights some of the great changes that have been ushered in, different from other countries.
You have to imagine, what would be the best healthcare service you would like to get? I mean, let's say something happens with you, in LA, but you live in New York, and let's say you break your leg, and the X-ray pictures are taken, and you're taken care of. But you live in New York, so you travel back to New York, and next week you should go and re-examine your leg. Would it be, obvious to that the doctor you're going actually has the information, like all the X-ray pictures that were taken, what medicine was prescribed to you, like all this information? Would it be nice to be available, right? So, if I need a prescription or medicine, I just call to my doctor. He puts the information in the system. I can go to any pharmacy and I will get my medicine. So they all connected between each other. I never have a very complicated person. I have had a heart surgery, so it was a very complex surgery, and it was delivered in South Estonia, but I live in North. And my doctors, they have to exchange data and their opinions basically continuously. So I benefit a lot from this kind of system. Or let's say the tax area. If I say to my bank that please share my data, the government has all the data about my incomes and outcomes to prepare my tax declaration. So we have a zero-click tax declaration. Currently, we still force people to go to the portal and then push the button, because then they actually feel that they pay taxes. But as 95% of people don't change anything on their tax declaration, we basically could send them SMS that last year your taxes were in this amount, and if you don't act during next 48 hours, we will transfer back you the money that you paid extra. We could do this kind of stuff. It's possible. So declaring taxes is literally like a couple of minutes, maybe maximum, to review if everything is correct. And as I said, 95% don't declare anything. So it's a zero cost and then zero time. For another example, we are the only society that heavily use digital signature. So I can't understand those DocuSign or stuff that you sign a document and then you picture the paper and then you send the picture to somebody. It's absolutely not secure. So it's one of the interesting things is that if you build a truly digital society, you have to pay extra attention on crypto. In our case, if I want to sign a document with you, I just write a document, then right click, sign digitally, and I send the document to you. It takes zero cost and zero time. And then you sign, you in US, and you send this to me back. So it takes 10 minutes, and we have a signed contract, and we can go to court later if needed. Imagine the same thing in your world. When you sign a document, then you invite FedEx, you pay $50, then it takes a week. Then I sign, I pay $50, it takes another week, and then after 2 weeks, we have a signed contract. Compare the efficiency. Mm-hmm. And that's the mindset you see here in Estonia. What I think we're very proud of is that being digital truly helps you to improve situation. I'll give you another example, e-school. All the schools in Estonia, they have to use some kind of platform that helps communication between the student, teacher, and the parent. And what we have seen is that when parents are really, I have this app here in my phone, and I can see how my kids are doing at school. And then I can see how my son is doing compared with other children, for example. And if I see my child lagging behind, obviously I'm to be engaged. I will help my son and work with him. So, and our teachers have understood that it's extremely powerful when you actually can through like sharing the data and how the child is developing, like sharing this actively with parents improves the quality of the studies. And like Estonia is number one in Europe in PISA tests. I mean, like we have the, together with Finland, we have the best education in Europe, and we are way ahead than US. And it's, I mean, like if I compare like the way how we teach children, I cannot say that like teachers are in US are worse compared to Estonian ones. They are not. The difference comes from the engagement, the fact that like through sharing data, like being digital, I mean, everything is available. I know what needs to be studied for tomorrow. It's in my app, so I can follow that basically. Like, so I can support my girl or my boy, like, okay, you have to do this in math or in physics, like show me like let's think together, like how to solve this problem, et cetera. I mean, like through this kind of, engagement, like you actually improve the results.
Mm. You alluded to security and the lack of security in many of the sort of more traditional processes we use, like signing contracts is the example you gave. But naturally, at least just sort of intellectually, a concern of having a digital society to the degree that Estonia is, there would be, you know, concerns many people would have about the possibility of tapping into that, bad actors tapping into that, to say nothing of other ways in which there might be security issues. And I'm curious how especially as CIO, when you were CIO of the country, how did you think about that? How did you orient things such to ensure that as you were progressing so rapidly that you were doing so in a way that also factored in the need for appropriate levels of security?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually, it's important to understand what is the problem you want to solve. For example, we believe that if hospitals share data and if we have a full overview about the patient, it doesn't matter which hospital he or she went, but we have a full overview of what happened, that we believe that it actually leads to the better healthcare. I mean, when doctors have full information about the patient, it actually leads to better healthcare. So, okay, we want to provide that. Okay, how can we do it? How can we avoid that those doctors or nurses, they won't sneak or peek, and how can we protect the privacy? And the best solution is actually you give this information to be available for the patient who actually has access to your data. So you become your own big brother. I mean, like the doctors know that if they sneak or peek, and if the patient like finds this out, they will be fired instantly. I mean, no question asked. And if they like give this information to the third person, let's say the journalist, they go to jail. And this there is no like paper like record. I mean, today, like in US hospital, when there is like a paper record, everybody has a phone with a camera. So if I take a picture, like who took the picture? Nobody knows. I mean, the famous Formula One driver, Michael Schumacher, treated in Swiss hospital. The patient record was leaked. How? Because it was on paper and it was pictured with phone, and nobody knows how to do that. I mean, when you're digital, you always know who actually queried the data, who actually had it in front of their eyes. And then you can basically, after a couple of hangings, I mean, the system starts to work itself. The same with policemen. I mean, like, I don't have to carry any driving license or any documentation with me, because whenever I'm pulled over, the police car has all the information available inside the police car, like about my insurance, my criminal registry, traffic registry, whatever I have, it's all there. So basically they know, like before they see me, they know that I'm driving the car. So that's why it's convenient for me, because I don't have to like carry any, as I said, driving license or car documentation or anything. I mean, like, but, at the same time, I know that police won't use this system against me, because if I figure out that they just queried me without reason, they're in trouble. I mean, again, like zero tolerance, like they will be fired instantly, etc. And like you can put in jail also. So that's my point. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, like in Estonia, we have e-voting. We actually can vote over the internet. And they're not talking about the machines in the corner like you have in US. I mean, I'm talking about like voting behind my computer at home. So like you feel first thought will be like, maybe if somebody puts a gun in my head and says, like, vote for me, I mean, like, how you avoid that kind of situation? And again, it's an interesting problem. How can we avoid it? So, for example, with e-voting in Estonia, you can vote as many times you vote on. So always the last vote counts. So what it means is that if you put the gun into my head and say, vote for me, I say, yes, I will vote for you. But whenever you leave, I will vote again. So there's no point. I mean, like, you can't, basically, the maximum damage you can do, you can control one vote. So, and in the end of the day, like, we have shown several times that digital voting is actually way more accurate than how to say, transparent than voting on paper.
Yeah.
Less cheating is possible. So, but it's just example of different type of thinking. So, if you have a complex problem, there are always like different solutions how to solve that problem. So you just have to be open-minded. And in our case, in Estonian case, like whenever we have a complex problem, we have like we ask from ourselves, like, can we actually solve it digitally somehow?
And the examples you're giving, the healthcare examples, certainly the insurance examples with the police, there's a cooperation necessary between government, citizens, and business. And I'm curious, as this transformation has gone on, as you modestly pointed out a lot of it before you arrived, but certainly continuing while you arrived, I'm curious, between government, business, and citizens, was there one party that required more convincing than others? How did that happen?
I mean, we were lucky that the very tough and radical changes were made already 20 years ago. It's basically, I mean, all those tough questions that may arise about privacy and data protection, those questions, I mean, they couldn't be addressed because people, I mean, it was so new for the people, so they basically didn't understand it. Like, so we were just lucky to do that before it actually started to matter more. But now we have understood that, the way how we protect privacy. I mean, we totally understand that, being digital protects your privacy more than being on paper, or like we call it being analog, because digital always leaves traces. And in the beginning, I think the government was lagging behind. Now it's definitely the private sector because it's a small market. So business-wise, not all the time all the innovations actually work. So, for example, open data is, even though we have supported a lot, open data is only makes sense in large markets, right? Because there is not so many service users, or you can't design too many services to be useful. It's not only a student problem, it's the problem of the whole Scandinavia. I mean, all in all, it's a 20 million market only, so not so big enough. But yeah, I mean, answering your question, I mean, you always have to convince people, but when people actually believe in you, and the government has shown great results, like all these taxes, healthcare, education. I mean, when we introduced this new reform that what if companies, you give us all your business-to-business deals on a monthly basis, there was no resistance. There was like, it was more about discussion about potential red tape, that it might increase red tape. But like, nobody talked about like the problem of data protection or privacy, or, oh, those are my business secrets. Like, how can I reveal them to the government? Like, I don't know. I mean, when people see the results, when people truly see that through this digitalization, things get better, they want that. They start to want that. It's very hard to actually make the first step. And also, like, it's a huge problem, for example, what US or UK or Germany has, that your baseline is really weak. I mean, like, technologically, you are extremely advanced countries. But, I mean, to build digital society, there are a couple of things that need to be put in place. For example, like unique identifiers that can be used about the person, and both sectors, the private sector and public sector, they both recognize the same unique identifier. Like, you need that kind of stuff. You have it in US, but it you can be only used like in social security, not elsewhere. So, but think about it that it's actually used elsewhere. Doesn't matter, insurance, healthcare, like banking, grocery store, doesn't matter. Like, you're the same person for everybody. Then you unlock the true power. And that's why I'm actually super interested what happens now in India, because India, even though, I'll say, economically, like from society point of view, they're not so advanced, but they have all the things they have put in place digitally at the moment, from the engineer's perspective. I'm an engineer, so from the engineer's perspective, they have made the right steps. They need to move forward and then do the next steps also in the right way. But compared, for example, the UK or US, I mean, they're like, what's it? Baseline for digital society is actually stronger than anyone before.
Very interesting. I wanted to also, you alluded very early in our conversation to e-residency and the borderless society. And I want to talk a little bit about, again, that idea, how it came about, what its aim is, and I'd be interested in how you see it being carried out and the benefits to Estonia in the process.
When I wrote the essay, I mean, it was very simple goal. I mean, if you think it like, let's compare it with the private sector. If you are the CEO of the large enterprises and you want to get more profit, in most cases, you need, first of all, more revenue. And to get more revenue, you need more customers, because you can deal with cost, but you can deal with cost only to a certain limit. I mean, if you are able to increase revenues, the sky is the limit. So, no borders there. So, but to get more customers, you need to sell more. And if you now translate that to the public sector, it's the same thing with governments. I mean, if you want to get more wealth to your people, you need to create better and larger economy. And Estonia is not so famous about natural resources. I mean, to get more customers, what it means, I mean, we can increase the child birth rate, possible, but it gives back you the results after 25, 30, 40 years. Like US, UK, and Germany, you have benefited a lot from immigration. But in Estonia, we have a problem. Nobody wants to come because, like, we live so up north. I mean, we are in latitude of Alaska, so it's cold and dark here. So nobody wants to come here. I mean, last year we got 7, I think. Those methods don't work for Estonians. But on the same time, we are able to serve Estonians all around the world. So if there's an Estonian living in Silicon Valley, he can participate and be part of our society because, everything is digital. Like, you want to sign a contract, you want to be paid taxes, you want to vote. I mean, you can because, like, everything is location dependent because it's digital. And, like, we figure out, like, if we can serve Estonians all around the world, why should we serve only Estonians? I mean, why not to serve everybody who is so-called digital nomads, lives a couple of months here, a couple of months there. Today they are Singapore, tomorrow they're in Japan, months later they are in France. I mean, like, and if, for example, what if they want to run a business? Like, who is the government who can actually support those kind of people who travel a lot, who actually work in different locations? And then we digged in and understood that, I mean, the role of the government is changing. I mean, you have seen disruption in every industry, like Uber did in taxis or like Airbnb did in accommodation. So take the music industry. Like, how you bought your music 20 years ago?
A tape, a record, well, 20, the CD would have been at that time.
Yeah, I mean, CD, exactly. So you went to the local music store and you bought the CD. Like, how you buy your music today?
All digitally. Or don't buy it at all. You stream it. You have a service that's more broadly applicable.
So the technology has changed and the way how you actually listen music have changed because 20 years ago, you had to listen to the whole album because it was so inconvenient to change the CDs all the time. So
that's right.
Yeah, but nowadays you don't listen to the whole album anymore. Like you most probably, as you said, you stream. And there won't be your local music store most probably anymore because they're out of business. So what we predict is that the same kind of disruption will happen with government. I mean, people actually like to buy services where it's convenient and hassle-free and cheap or cheaper. So what if it's easier and cheaper and more hassle-free to run a business in Estonia compared to the U.S.? Mm-hmm. Okay, U.S. is a bad example. I mean, like, you are very tough with that kind of thinking. But let's say in our case, Brexit, let's say the people from U.K. or Germany, like, we see that. I mean, let's see, this U.S. person wants to run a business in Europe, like, and they actually want to have a body in Europe. Like, so how can you do that? How can I run my business in Europe behind my kitchen table in San Francisco? Voila, become e-Estonian and you can do that. Mm-hmm. It's simple. It's easy. It's 1,000 euro per year. Like if you buy full service means that like you don't have to hassle any kind of invoicing, accounting or anything. And to become an e-Estonian is 100 euros. So like, you take a provider like Leapin, for example, and you are the king of the world. Like, and you can travel and like be part of European Union economical system, like no worries at all.
Hmm. What's the screening process on the Estonian side?
I mean, like you have to give us like your fingerprints, and we ran full background search. So what we do is that. Analyzing, I'll say, are you in terrorist database or we random like full background search because like sure. We really want to choose like to whom we actually give this I'll say digital citizenship and to whom we don't give that. So it's actually around 1.5% of applications are declined.
I see. And how many people have taken advantage of it today?
I mean, it's a fraction. I mean, by law, it's a benefit. It means that whenever you commit something, we can cancel your status instantly. So without even giving a reason. Mm-hmm. So it's not the citizenship. It's the residency. So whenever you misbehave, so called, let's say this way, then but I mean like if I say misbehave, you actually have to do something really bad. I mean, I can't even imagine what can it be. Like, some kind of hacking crime, like, then we can say.
Right, exactly. I wanted to conclude with your more recent work since leaving the government. You're now consulting to, among other things, to countries, perhaps cities as well, who are looking to make the kinds of changes that you've ushered in Estonia. And I wonder what insights you have drawn. You've already talked about some of the places that are really ripe for this kind of change, Scandinavia being an obvious one because of the cultural similarities to what you've described. And what strikes me as really a very important ingredient here being trust in government, which is in short supply in a lot of countries. But I wonder, you know, how is it going? What other factors are there that you see as the either limiting factors or those factors that need to be in place in order to usher in changes like what we've seen?
I mean, I'm happy with what happens in private sector. Private sector in every country is developed extremely fast, like no doubt on that. But I'm very worried what happens in, if we talk about true digital society. Like everything is great in North Europe. I mean, Scandinavia, Finland, Baltics, like they're doing digitally very well, not so much elsewhere. Yeah, we can pick certain countries like Israel and Singapore, obviously, but and then China, definitely. China is doing great, but I'm worried about especially Western Europe, U.S., Canada. Like you could do way better, and I mean, like it's funny. I mean. People like to say that, oh, like Estonia is so small and like that's why it's so easy to do stuff, like to be digital there. But I mean, if you think about it, like, let's take the internet bank. It's not so that, like, in Estonia, in the internet bank, in the internet bank, we can only check account balance because we are a small country. And if you are the US and like 300 times larger, then you also can like do the payments and buy shares and stuff like that. But we are, as a small country, we can't do that because we can't afford that kind of functionality. It's not so. I mean, like, it's like, in our internet bank, I bet we have same amount of functionality as what you have in US. Or it can be that in our healthcare hospital system, there is only patient registration and the next step is cemetery. Because we are a small country, we cannot afford like all those functionality what you have in US. It's not so. It's also the same. We have the same amount of services in the hospital system. So the question is, the difference comes from scalability. But in a time of cloud, scalability is actually very, I would say, easy. It's like so simple, like to do that. And even more, I mean, like the cost per transaction, as we have to, I say, like we have to invest the same amount of money to get the same kind of functionality. I mean, the cost per transaction is actually smaller in larger governments or larger countries. So larger countries actually could win way more from digitalization compared with smaller countries, especially because of cost per transaction being smaller. And that's why I still can't understand, like, why don't you move? I mean, like, start doing stuff. I mean, I know the problem. The problem is that, as I said, to make digital society happen, you need to put certain engineering elements in place. But like people mix it with politics and instead of, I'll say, and then we're stuck because like whenever you talk about unique identifiers, every person has to have a unique identifier and like everybody starts to talk about Big Brother and then the story ends. And on the same time, but then they talk about Big Brother, they are using their Apple phone. So which is like ridiculous, like for my eyes at least. Like. So that's the worrying part. But I mean, like, obviously being Estonian, I'm happy because as long as you don't move, it gives an advantage to the countries who are actually able to move. And as we now getting more and more e-Estonians to be like, joined, connected with our country. I mean, that's our, chance. I mean, to get more customers. I mean, it's like the David and Goliath thing. I mean, small startup fighting and disrupting like areas that haven't been disrupted before. I mean, like music industry, like everybody thought that it cannot be changed. It's so conservative. I mean, everybody, Sony and others, they all like basically own the market. And then the Spotify and SoundCloud comes and then change it. Or like Skype. That actually was developed here in Estonia. Yeah. And they still own more than 50% of international calls. They totally disrupt the big telecoms and all that. So be lazy, like still worried about your privacy, like actually calls privacy. I mean, like you think yes. that you have a privacy, but you actually do them. And be concerned about your unique identifiers and talk about it like continuously next 20, 30 years. And led us to conquer the world. Because mine, like, do you truly believe that, like, that the monopolies of the governments will remain? That I mean, the same kind of disruption what we saw in accommodation or in hotel business or in travel business. I mean, that this won't happen in governments. Mm-hmm. Come on. People get more and more global, and they will like as their awareness raises, they will start buying services. When it's convenient and I'll say cost efficient for them.
Exactly.
So don't expect any patriotism there.
You smell a lot of opportunity right now for Estonia.
We actually smelled that already 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, we now actually fulfilled the plan. And then actually that was extremely interesting. Why I like to be the CIO is that if you can run certain projects as a startup in a government, it's fun.
Can you talk about the approach and mindset that's allowed Estonia to become so efficient?
Yeah, I mean, like, we haven't had time. I mean, there, like, I just give you a hint. Like, one of like one thing why Estevin is so efficient is that the way how we deal with application, how we see IT, for example, we have a slogan, not all the bugs need to be fixed. And like the way how we approach like system development, I mean, we have created all this in Estonia, having in average around 80 million euro IT budget for the whole government. Mm-hmm. On the same time, the US has 80 billion every year, like so, not even close like it development. So, or like data embassies, like country in the cloud. That's the solution I developed. It's my PhD actually. Hmm. I developed when the Russians at Crimea. So we have been occupied every century, as long as we know in the history, every century somebody has occupied Estonia. So we played through the scenario. Can we continue, like even let's say Russia occupies us again, like as it happened 80 years ago. So can we become a virtual country? Can we actually continue as Jews before country of Israel was born? Like, so we played through those scenarios. Microsoft was a huge help for us. We actually did several studies together. So we published four or five different scientific articles about that. Also, like so, we didn't have time to talk about no legacy policy. Like we have no legacy policy. We actually, like by law, we avoid to get legacy. Hmm. I mean, the legacy is a huge problem, I'd say, in US. Like, you still have lots of stuff written in COBOL, for example, the language that was invented in 1959. So, and you can't get rid of that because nobody is, I'll say, willing to
turn it off.
Yeah. So, but like we understood, like, how our neighbors in Sweden or Finland suffered from that. So we developed like no legacy policy. Again, like we ran a scientific study and then still like how to avoid. Or we had a cyber war in 2007 with Russia. It was first cyber war in human history, like officially recorded. And like we benefited a lot from that, even though nothing was like one bank was down for 1 hour and 20 minutes, like, but that was the maximum damage. So, but like heavily it was in the news for a month. Like, so like what it actually gives to the people, like how it helps the society. For example, I really suggest every country to have a cyber war because like, people get knowledgeable about privacy. They actually understand the topic afterwards. Like, I mean, If like every evening in the main news show, like somebody appears, let's say the head of the major hospital saying like, okay, we were attacked today, and he explains like how they protect themselves and how can patients be sure that the information is not leaking, and if it leaks, what then happens? People get knowledgeable, and if people get knowledgeable, they are not afraid of so much of all those things. Mm-hmm. Or like as we start. Like we have been teaching programming since the first grade, like already 7-8 years now. So again, like we had the largest robotics event for students in the world. Like so, of all this, basically, I mean, I had to teach to my children the meaning of Q when I was in JFK Airport, because like when we step out from the plane, they show this immigration line.
Yes.
They asked me what is this, and I was like, what? Like all those people standing, and it's a queue. Like, what is a queue? Because they have seen a queue in a grocery store, like 7 people or 5 people, like, but they have never seen an organized queue with ropes. And in the end of the day, I mean, after 45 minutes in that immigration line, they basically asked me, like, they were 4 and 5 years old back then, so they asked, like, can't they have some kind of app for this?
So, that's great. So, I mean, like, speaks volumes.
Yeah, I mean, again, like that's the attitude. Like, I mean, if something is inconvenient or like consists lots of hassle, I mean, it would be a public topic in Estonia, and people proposing solutions like how to clean up that mess, basically.
Fascinating.
There are always, we can always improve situations. We can always improve stuff, but I'm actually proud of the work of the people I've been doing here, like 20 plus years.
Well, Tavi Kotka, thank you so much for taking time and joining us on the Forum on World-Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Diane Schwarz, the CIO of Textron. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.